Okay, so if you have been in Sweden the last 2 weeks, you probably have not missed what has happened about a week and a half ago, right? We had the Pope Francis visit Lund and Malmö, and it was the first time in history that Pope has participated in celebrations connected with the Reformation. So next year there'll be 500 years from when the Reformation started, and so they're starting the year of celebrations. They've just started it in October, on October 31, and this is the first time that a Pope has participated in such an event. So we are living in truly momentous times. Things are happening in the world, and they're happening fast. And I think this kind of study is very interesting because there's the danger that things are happening and we just sort of miss them, and we don't understand the importance of what's going on, and also how serious these times are. And I think it affects the way we look at our faith, because if we have been asleep until now, this is the time to wake up if we are sleeping. Okay, so if you look at your first outline, so that's the one that is entitled Antichrist 1, the Counterfeit Deception. When Satan rebelled against God in heaven, okay, what was his aim? Okay, we're not going to read those verses, but you'll find those verses in Isaiah, also Ezekiel. What was Satan's idea? Why did he rebel? What was he trying to achieve? Okay, any thoughts? Okay. The text tells us that he wanted to ascend above God. He wanted to have his throne. He wanted to sit as God. So he wanted to be like God, but he didn't want to be like God in goodness or wisdom, or, we should all try to be like God. We should try to emulate God in our kindness and our love to others. But that's not what he wanted. He was after the position, the authority of God. And when Troy was taken, if you remember in history, there was this ancient city of Troy, and the Greeks were trying to take the city, and they were besieging it, and they tried all sorts of things, and they just couldn't get in. And with all their different maneuvers, but in the end, they had a brilliant idea, and that was that they should take the city by making this huge wooden horse. Do you remember the story? And the soldiers hid inside, and they said, "Oh, we're going to go now, but we're going to leave you a goodbye present because you are such, good soldiers. You've defended your city so well." So they pretended to leave, and they left this wooden horse. Well, the Trojans, they brought the horse inside the city. And of course, when the city was sleeping, the soldiers came out of the horse and they took the city. And so, Satan, of course, in heaven, he tried to, by talking to the other angels and trying to stir up rebellion, he tried to sort of take over heaven. Well, it didn't work. So then he was cast down to heaven, sorry, cast out of heaven to earth, and now he's trying here a different kind of stratagem, just like the Trojans did. And so Satan wants to be worshipped. Do you remember when Satan was tempting Jesus in the wilderness? What was the third temptation? He took Jesus on a high mountain. And he said to him, what? I will give you all this. He showed him all the world. I will give you all this if you, what? Worship me. So, you know, in the end, that's what he wants. He wants to be worshipped, you know. He wants the attention of everybody. And so, but of course, Jesus didn't worship him. So that has been Satan's aim all along. Now, you know, he can't show up, you know, right now and you know, incarnate and say, hey, I'm Satan, everybody worship me. That's not going to work. So he has to find human agents to accomplish that for him. So that's where we have the idea of the Antichrist. So Antichrist, so the prefix anti, what does that mean? If you look it up in the dictionary, it has sort of three meanings. One is against something, or opposed to something. The third meaning is instead of something. Okay, so if you say that, you know, this is anti-art, it is like something that takes the place of art, or anti-music. So this is somebody who is against Christ, opposes Christ, but most of all, that takes the place of Christ. Okay? So the Bible actually mentions the word Antichrist, but also there are other symbols in the Bible. The Bible talks about the beast, the little horn. It talks about Babylon. There are a lot of different terms that are put, that are talked about. And when you compare what all these entities are doing and what sort of their characteristics are, you realize that they're actually talking about the same thing. Okay? Now this is a very important thing to catch. So, for example, if you get up in the morning and I say to you, hey, Selfa, can you please get me some carrots from the store, right? You say, okay, I'll get you some carrots. And then, let's say we're roommates, okay? And then, you know, later in the world, I call you up and I say, hey, do you remember those orange things that you're going to get me? Oh yeah, okay. And then I send you a text message and I say, remember those vegetables with, you know, beta carotene in them? Can you please remember to get them? Right? Now, will you forget to get me carrots? Probably not, right? Because I kept repeating it and I emphasized it. And then you were thinking, oh, wow, this must be really important. If she wants these carrots, you know, she must be on a carrot diet. And I also use different words to express the same thing, you know. So you think, wow, this is really important. So when the Bible talks about, you know, the beast, the little horn, the Antichrist, you know, the scarlet woman in Babylon, and they all sort of have the same characteristics, you think, wow, you know, the Bible is really trying to put something across. You know, what is it? Okay, so that's what we're going to study today. Now, Jonathan here, he has, if you look on your first outline, Antichrist 1, he has made a really nice table here, which I really like, about the similarities between what we call the Antichrist and Jesus. But before we do that, let's read Revelation 13, 1 to 5. Very, very important passage. Revelation 13, 1 to 5. Okay, whoever has it first, please start reading.
It says, then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if he had been mortally wounded, and his deadliness was killed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies, as he was given authority to continue for 42 months.
Right. Okay. So what do we read about here? We read about a beast, right? A beast with 10 horns. Remember the number 10? It has 7 heads. And there's some key words. Okay. One is in verse 1. It says names of blasphemy. Okay. Now, this beast, the dragon gave him his power, his seat, and great authority. Now, who's the dragon in the Bible? Who represents the dragon, the serpent? Satan. Okay, so Satan gives this beast authority and power, right? So you see how he doesn't work himself indirectly. He uses somebody as his man, you know, his sort of person on earth, okay? So he gives this power, his authority. And then it says that the whole world wandered after the beast. And what do they do in verse 4? What does it say there? They worship the dragon. So by worshiping this beast, they wander after this beast. They're actually worshiping the dragon. So see how Satan is accomplishing his thing by having this authority, this power sort of representing him. And it says, and they worship the beast, saying, "Who is like unto beast?" Now, there's another verse in the Bible, in Exodus, you'll see, which says, "Who is like unto God?" There's this, "Who is like unto God?" You know. So, you know, God is the one that should fill our hearts with admiration and awe and respect. But here, the people are saying, "Who is like unto the beast?" Not, "Who is like unto God?" Right, so the attention is diverted from God to the beast. And then in verse 5, again we see mouth speaking things of speaking great things, words of blasphemy. And then there's a time period of 42 months. Okay. Good. Let's lay that to a side. And then let's also read 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 1 to 4. So, 2 Thessalonians 2, 1 to 4. Maybe you can read it.
Now, 2 Thessalonians
2, 1 to 4.
Verse 1 to 4. "Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Let not one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God."
Right? Mm-hmm. No, that's good. All right. Okay, so what is Paul saying here? People are saying in his time, "Oh, Jesus has already come." He said, no, Jesus has not come. Don't be deceived, because before Jesus comes, something else has to happen. There has to be this son, a man of sin. He has to be revealed, the son of perdition. See, he's using other sort of synonyms: man of sin, son of perdition. And then verse 4, he gives us the characteristics. What does it say? He opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God. So he opposes God. Now, or Christ, right? What do we say that anti means? Oppose. So it's anti-Christ. He opposes God. And the second part of the verse, "and so that he that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So he seeks to sort of replace God in the place of God. Okay, so now if you look at this table here on the first page, we see how some very interesting parallels between Jesus' ministry and the work of the Antichrist. How, you know, Satan tries to imitate, you know, what Jesus does. Also with the purpose of deceiving, you know, the people. Jesus began his ministry by coming out of the water, and then in Revelation, we don't have time to go through all these texts, but in Revelation then there's this beast that comes up out of the water. The Jesus ministry on earth was 3.5 years, and the work of the Antichrist, the beast, is also 3.5 prophetic years, and so on. He's worshipped. Jesus died and was resurrected. Well, the beast had a deadly wound, but it was healed. Also, just as Jesus was worshipped after resurrection, the beast will seek worship. Jesus sits on his Father's throne. The beast is also sitting on it says here in verse 4 in Thessalonians, he's sitting in the temple of God, right? And also in the end times, God will put his seal on his people. The beast will also want to put his name on his followers. Okay, but you can read those at home and compare those texts. I mean, these are very, very interesting passages and very interesting topics.